Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Howdy, and welcome back to the Addicted Motors podcast.
The best podcast out there.
Second best podcast out there. This is round two of this podcast because we recorded one last week and the audio dumped. So we're back with new topics. Definitely not the ones we talked about last week. So today on the podcast, we've got a couple topics for you. We're going to go over, talk about a little bit of race cars, spec racing series. I'm also going to talk about enthusiast cars that have the longest ownership periods or that stick with the owners the longest. We'll get to that in a little bit. And the dumbest improvements that Land Rover's made iteratively to its vehicles, which I'm sure there's a lot to discuss there. So get your topics ready and then let us know in the comments what you think the best ones are. But before we get into that, let's talk cars. Events. Again, we've got our Cars and Coffee, Croissants and Coffee coming up. Every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. It's going to be dark this Saturday, but that will just make things more interesting. So if you're in Richmond, come on out. We did a small event last weekend at a clothing shop in the rain with a bunch of car dudes. It was actually a pretty good time for 9 o'clock in the morning in the rain. So a bunch of cool cars came out.
The classic Radwood era higher education.
Oh, yeah. I mean, MTech E30, SECs, Mondial, 355, 993s. Had a bunch of Rovers out there, which is awesome. Classic P38, L322. I mean, no 405, but that's okay. So that wasn't bad. So a few things going on, nothing crazy. We're out of our big season of Land Rover and other type of themed events. So nothing on the horizon. But shop updates. Let's talk shop. Mike Sports Car Workshops is here. What's been going on in the shop?
How do I not just say a bunch of air-cooled stuff again? bunch of air-cooled stuff.
When is the rebrand? I know we introduce the Rover kind of podcast and stuff, but he probably has, I would say right now, 75% of your business is air-cooled portions, right?
Yeah, I don't know. What's the German word for car? Well, I guess just fucking Auto or whatever. I don't know. Yeah. I guess I got to work in house into my name. All the German guys do house, right? Sports car workhouse.
Repair, yeah, sports Haas.
Yeah, bunch of air-cooled, bunch of really cool air-cooled.
Luft Haas.
Luft house.
Luft Haas,
99
yeah.
Luft shops. God, what am I doing? Just finished up a Mustang. I wouldn't call it a resto, but mechanical restoration.
How about the fact that there is a about-to-be-ordained Roof 993 twin turbo? It's pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, I guess if you like air cooled, it's cool.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Mike's now jaded from the air cooled. I've seen so many air cooled, they're not that cool anymore. Well,
it's pretty cool. It's a pretty sick blue with the red calipers, very period wheels, I think.
The owner gave us a quick, he recently purchased it, but I think the car doesn't have a roof VIN. Which, again, Roof isn't a manufacturer. They are an upfitter or downfitter or whatever you want to call it. Apparently, they've contacted him to bring the car over for a media event. They're paying him and shipping the car there, and they will certify, you know, like a British, like the, you know, what they do for the British Car Club, the British, the certificate of authenticity. Yeah. They're going to ordain the car with proper Roof badges. And that's what I was asking him. If it's like Mercedes, where you could, you know, back in the 80s and the early...
Like Dynan.
Yeah, but
they do that still.
But I think Mercedes was the best, was the one that was most documented. Because you could be if you have three AMG bits on a W126 or a 140, you could technically have the AMG badge and get it. So if you had like the cams and the body kit and like a steering wheel or something like that,
yeah,
like, you could have a badge as an AMG. So,
But yeah, so, you know, the classic slew of very interesting 911s. We've got that Lotus Elan M100, oh, yeah, like a 90s Elan.
When was the last time you saw a Lotus Elan in any condition in the States?
That's pretty cool.
It is cool.
It's very interesting. Not necessarily a valuable or easy car to own, but it's unique.
It's always the same guy that owns that. It's like some guy that bought it in the 90s or the early 2000s for like fun track things. Oh, look, Sunoco's trying to
Sunoco Race Gas.
Oh.
If you want race gas, hit me up.
Sunoco. But yeah, no, it came in as a non-runner and now it's running. I mean, was it just the immobilizer that screwed it up or something? It was something silly.
Well, it was immobilizer, but it's also been sitting for a long time, so it had a dead miss. The alternator was locked up, so the serpentine belt just...
Again, if you haven't started for a while and you're like, oh, my engine's bad.
Yeah, so I don't think he didn't have the hood popped. All he knew was, you know, the last time it ran, it was smoking really bad. So honestly, about the easiest solution to a smoking coming from engine bay solution, I think.
Front engine bay, which was unfortunate.
Yes,
but
yes, front engine bay, front wheel drive. But honestly,
it says cool 170 on the speedometer, so that thing is a supercar.
By middle school rules, that car goes 170 miles an hour.
That car's cool.
God, what else is over there? Trying to envision.
What car's giving you problems? What can't you find
all
parts for?
All cars give me problems. Well, I mean, you know, the M100, unsurprisingly, parts are difficult. There's a lot of cross-references out there. The Elan. Oh. They don't always
That's
cross
a Zuzu engine, right? Or
Zuzu
something?
Zuzu engine.
Four-cylinder with fancy bits on it?
Yeah.
Not tuned by Lotus or tuned by Lotus?
Yeah, I honestly don't know a ton about the M100s.
No.
You know, typically Lotus will do head work, but I don't even know if they
That's what I mean. They are a tuning house for suspension and engines, but with that one, I'm wondering, besides suspension, if they did anything.
I don't know. I'd have to
I don't
do
know. Let us know in the comments if you're a Lotus Elan.
If you are a Lotus M100 guy, you probably know more about this.
And actually, you'll make bad comments. So actually, I don't even really want to talk to you. So
hey, I'm team M100. I think they're cool. They look, you know, they're fun and tossable. And
you just don't want that.
I mean, is definitely a better car, sorry, but like the Lotus is way cooler, way more interesting.
Yeah, you just again, that's not the conversation you need to have at Cars and Coffee when you want to tell 20 years of history on your weird Lotus that no one's appreciated until right now.
Yeah, I've seen like two my entire life.
That's like
like
waiting a quarter of your life to for someone to kind of like a car you thought was cool in the 90s. That's
hey,
a tough look.
Hey, you don't do cars for other people.
That's a commitment. I don't know.
Yeah, a little bit of rover stuff. Doing a coil conversion on a L320 right now.
Oh, that's what it's in for?
Yeah, well, that and some other deferred maintenance.
So with the coil conversion, does that come with any type of like ECU reprogramming bits?
Yeah, typically it involves a little plug-in.
Or block off.
Yeah, so you're just getting the air suspension errors.
Huh. That's what I figured. I've never done it besides putting it in my cart for it'll happen one day with my L322.
Well, I don't know if it counts as, you know, shop going-ons, but... In the process of getting set up to deal Sunoco race gas, since you have to drive like 45 minutes to get non-ethanol or high octane.
Oh, this is a purely selfish move, though, because it's the implication that Mike's going to start doing a lot of racing, as you can see behind us.
No, that's unfortunately, I am not allowed to run high octane in that per the spec rules. But I have, you know, customer cars that take 110 or 105.
Two customers.
Hey, it's been a while since I've owned a car that needed race gas, but, you know, the last time I needed race gas, I don't even remember what I did. I had to get 5-gallon buckets from far away.
Go down an airport or something like that.
Yeah, but honestly, the non-ethanol, I think, would be huge. You know, just...
What about synthetic fuel? Do you have any synthetic fuel fucking...
You just sent me over a quote list of a bunch of stuff, so I got to go through it and see. It's the classic good old boy thing. You know, you just keep calling a guy until he finally does... what he says he's gonna
do. Yeah, that's not a thing that I think there's a sales rep for that's come knocking.
I tell you what, I called the Sunoco 1-800 race gas number.
That's a thing.
It's a thing. I didn't even get a robot at any point. It rang like three times and the dude answered. I don't even. When was the last time you called a company with more than 15 employees?
I'm picturing the dude. It's like that guy worked for like 20 years at Marlboro and was like, "What's the best like?" What's the best, like, in parallel industry?
How do I race gas? How do I keep causing cancer on a high level?
He's sitting there, puts his cigarette out, picks up his corded phone. Hey, listen, hello.
The Marlboro Sunoco tag team brand effort is something we need to see happen.
Almost as good as your Liquid Molly rep that just handed out titty posters. Speaking of titty posters, we went and looked at a building today, and there was a little alcove, little office, like a little mechanics changing room. Some good stuff. There's some good material in
there.
Very
period.
Very period material.
Yeah, you get period built cars. That was a period
decorated room.
Nothing
like scantily clad, average looking women on a calendar from a local distribution center from the 80s.
Whoever they could hire for off of a newspaper ad back then.
I was like, man. And there was little comments. It was a good time.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Let's move that on a little bit. Week in cars. Well, I'll start. My week in cars. Oh, I did a lot, actually. My Mercedes, since I think what I did at one point was overpressurize the SLS system trying to adjust the rear height. I think when I did that, I don't know, something happened and it blew out my main hydraulic line and the pump at the same time, apparently. I don't know. The pump has been leaking for a really long time and I feel like I haven't gotten full functionality. So I bought the Mercedes Source pump. I removed it, took it apart, cleaned it. Pulled out all the O-rings and bearings, cleaned them. The old O-rings were, it was plastic. It was plastic. It was flat. So obviously I think that's where my lack of pressurization and leaks came from. Put it all back together and it worked. Also did all the belts at the same time, all six of them. So that, took a lot longer than I think normal belt job or a pump rebuild in the car. Doesn't leak stuff anymore, which is actually pretty good. So I think that's what was covering the bottom of the car.
You gotta love the time period where they hadn't really figured out serpentine belts yet. Dude. So it was like, I don't know, just add more V-belts.
Well, to do the power steering, you had to take them all off consecutively. Yeah. And each is its own little task with its own little Allen head key adjustments. And then I forgot to tighten one, so I took it all back off again. And it's just man.
I like the Rolls Royce where it's four belts to do the exact same route.
The Mercedes, it's two.
Yeah, two. Yeah.
Power.
Imagine four.
Yeah. And one of them is definitely tighter than the other, and they're the same part number. Yeah. So that's cool, too.
Oh.
Yeah. What else? I don't think... I'm trying to muster up the courage to cut my classic scuttle piece to put a snorkel on, and I haven't done it yet.
Oh, you put a snorkel on that? Well, you really want two Lamborghinis with snorkels?
I don't know. Yeah,
man. It's got the aesthetic. I think no snorkel.
It does look decent. I do like it with the snorkel, though. Also lost out on a sale for a Safari Guard classic bumper with guard and winch for $350 in Charleston. That's a shame. That stuff comes up. I saw it randomly. Period Safari Guard with a fucking worn 12,000 winch and the whole thing. I had a guy go there to pick it up. He saw it. And the guy that was selling it was like, oh, sorry, my buddy just sold it to someone else who's 2 hours away. I'm like, I'm here with money in a truck. And he's like, I paid a guy $100 to do that, and he wouldn't even honor the deal. So that guy, we're sending you some bad juju for automotive anything.
May all your floorboards
may all your tires get nails in them because you can't honor a sale. So that was kind of a bummer. What about you?
Well, since you deleted the last podcast, I'm going to extend my What Did I Do in Cars to 2 weeks.
That's fine. Should we walk over there? Do you want to show the people?
It's a 10-footer. Yeah. We can see right here. I bought a race car. Pretty stoked. Going to be running in the mid...
They don't pick me up over here.
The Mid-Atlantic NASA regions. NASA Spec 3.
Yeah, right when you start having your second kid, that'll be on a racetrack.
Yeah, Well, growing up near the racetrack, the lesson I learned is to have all your toys before you get married and have kids. So far, she hasn't stopped me yet. So
far, there's been
she's
a good
keep pumping that number up, and so I have a high, a strong negotiation point to work from.
She doesn't even know you have this.
She may or may not know. I'm not really sure.
So what is it, and why do you buy it? Because there is one specific reason why you thought this was a good idea and why it is a good idea, but it's unfortunate that it's surrounded by a not great thing otherwise.
even as the shop, it's usually cheaper to just buy a car built for racing.
It's like buying a Rover that with a bad engine just for the bumpers and shit.
Yeah, just, you know, it's... It needs work. You know, I will be putting time and effort and money into it.
But you bought it for the cage, basically.
It's got a cage. Right. It's got the spec suspension on already, spec exhaust.
Engine's
been gone through, but, you know, that doesn't really matter to me.
Yeah, but it's a spec engine. You don't have to pull the engine out, put a different engine into it.
No. It's already got a lot of the stuff I need. It's like 70% of the way there. You know, it needs new safety equipment, needs some stuff. It was built for a different series originally, so I've got to undo some stuff, but a much easier starting point than just building one from scratch.
Well, I mean, that is the slippery slope you go down when deciding to jump into any type of spec racing series, whether it's Champ Car, Spec 3, anything NAS related. Is they all have they have rules. You have to build the car to the rules. There's not a lot of platforms you can do like a carryover that can do multiple. I'm sure it's possible, and guys do, to ensure that your investment is, you know, viable over a long term, you know.
I think the biggest series crossover issues that's like the hardest to reverse is like cage design.
Yeah, well, again, that's why you bought the car. So,
which this would probably run Champ Car without much pain as a Spec 3 car. I probably wouldn't even get laps or anything.
Is that all? Wait, hold on. That's all you. They would let you run it, but there would be a potential penalty. Which
I don't
is
know
fine,
if there would.
We're not competitive enough to worry about that.
Maybe there would. I'd have to go look at the Champ Car points list again. Been a while, but if I got points, it wouldn't be many. Or laps.
Well, they let you run, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's what matters.
Yeah.
Again, no one's getting competitive. No, you just want to drive the thing on the
Spec 3. You could run in a few places. You could definitely do like track days.
I just want to slam gears with the boys.
Yeah.
I
mean, that's slamming gears, slamming beers.
That's
got to be a saying. I don't know if it is, but it's got to be.
Off road.
Slamming beers and then slamming gears. Woo.
So the plan for that is Spec 3. Is there a plan for the M3? Or that's just.
You know, I don't know. It looks cool. I've always wanted an Estoril Blue M3.
It is an Estoril Blue. Actually, with low miles, too.
Yeah. It's a weird build.
It's losing coolant somewhere.
It's, well, yeah, you know. I haven't had time.
It's a BMW.
I haven't had time to look at it, and so
I bought
another car.
What worries
car.
Me is the fact there's no puddle under the car. Yeah. That's a problem.
Yeah. I mean, if I got to do a head gasket, I got to do a head gasket, whatever.
Yeah, at least the engine's worth
something. What's time?
Anything else?
Personally, I don't think so.
All right. Sales update.
Oh, shit. I skipped, like, the biggest shop happenings. I've been getting all of the cars ready for the Overcrest Rally. That has been so much work.
I'm not talking about that.
Troy's boycotting the Overcrest Rally.
I am boycotting the Overcrest Rally.
If you like rolling your jeans, that's the place to be.
Good for them. I wish everyone the best of luck.
Nails and tires.
Yeah, nails and tires. They all left. I talked to Andy. They were six hours.
He left like 5 a.m. this morning.
Yeah. So the Richmond crew will be well represented without me on this fun car adventure that I didn't maybe prep a whole car for to go. So that's a different story. All right, sales update. Well, our sales cars are posted. The P38 with the Taylor Engineering engine and our 01 D1 are for sale. They're posted on Facebook or on Instagram. If you're interested in those, let me know. I just refreshed those
very
postings.
Clean cars.
Yeah, very, very clean turnkey Rovers, and I do say that with confidence. We've actually put probably 300-400 miles on each of them, driving them around, loaning them out to friends, you know, like it's...
I mean, it's just like the race car. You can buy one for cheaper and have a shitty time making it as good as these, and it'll probably still be rustier, or just buy these.
Yeah, or buy the cheapest one and then put 10 grand into it, and then it'll still need an engine. Again, both these trucks have no rust and pretty much almost brand new bottom ends. You can't get any better in the real world than that. So those for sale. Again, let me know if you're interested in checking those on. What else? YouTube update. I haven't released much. Kind of just been busy getting some projects done. I released a small clip on the Mercedes if you like SEC content. The only thing with that is I started looking at exhausts because, the car sounds horrible. It just sounds like a freaking toaster.
Like a toaster? Rear muffler?
It has no sound. It has no sound, and it actually sounds like a VTEC. It has a buzzy sound from the leak around the catalytic converter, and it's horrible.
Well, just keep cutting sections out of the exhaust.
Yeah. Well, I think a new exhaust is like $900, which is not a lot. Bad. It's not horrible, but it will definitely make it sound cooler now that it rides nice and everything. All right. Rover's update. Nothing new. Rover's... All right, let's just jump
into it. Drove the Defender today.
Drove the Defender, yeah.
Always a blast. Love the fall weather.
Yeah. It's not full of water. All right, let's pause here to make sure this sticks. All right, we're back. We lost footage last time if I record too long. So we're here with our two topics, and let's start with the first one, right? So the concept behind this is I was kind of like the gentleman that brought the Elan in. You know, I'm like, wow, that guy seemed to have had that car for 20, 30 years or something like that. And the discussion we wanted to kick off was around enthusiast cars or trucks, but let's focus on sports cars that have the longest first or second owner periods or ownership times. And there's a few cars that pop into our minds, and we discussed this a little bit, but there's some outliers as well. I think I did do a little research. It is backed up by some facts, but I'll put those at the end because they're less interesting.
I've done no research. Mine is purely based on personal opinion.
Purely based on personal opinions, but things like that, Elan, and actually I posed this question to one of the guys that came to Cars and Coffee, and he had another good one as well, which you might have mentioned, but I'll let you go first with what you were thinking.
I remember last week my first gut reaction was a boxy Volvo. 240, 740.
Yep. Oh, yeah, I forgot. That was a good one.
Yeah, yeah. I'm calling that an enthusiast car. Big argument to be made that if car exists long enough.
Yeah, not a performance car, but it's now...
Any old car turns into an enthusiast car.
They're kind of expensive now if you want a nice 240 or 240 wagon.
People search them out. They're not just cheap cars for people. So I'm calling it an enthusiast car.
Yeah, and if you've had it that long, it's usually in okay condition, or else it's in beat condition, which is still interesting.
I mean, the amount of people that, you know, bought those new and then just kept commuting to their professor job in them for 20 years, you know.
But talk about a car. There's a few cars that fall in this category. I call it like a movie car. It is, it represents an archetype of a person, and it's like represented in a movie. Like, that was like the cool Professor Asheville, you know, like Raleigh,
the hip teacher, you know.
That was the car when it was new in the 90s. It was also represented as like the older car in the 2000s, and then like the cool kids throwback car in the 2010s. And now in the 2020s, you can pick from each of those characters which one you want to be.
It's like college professor or art student.
Yeah.
One of those two people probably owns that car.
And that, and again, I less with the one owner, but like the W123 Mercedes wagon.
You know, it's kind of a similar buyer, I feel
same
like.
Same buyer, yeah. All right, so that's one. What do you got? You got another one?
Man, I wish I remembered all my answers from last time.
I can't remember if you said this before, but one of the guys who was driving an Elise brought it up too.
Oh, I said Elise.
Yeah, I think you said Elise, he's like, yeah.
He said the same thing. Huh?
I mean, he showed up in a track spec cool Elise.
To the thing?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed him.
Oh, this was in the morning. This was at Cars. He's going to, yeah.
Oh, all right.
Rad stuff RBA. I don't know if he's been a customer or not. But he's got an Elise, and he's got a like a 2008 M6 manual, which is pretty weird. Opposite end of the spec.
You know, I never really liked those.
I never liked them, but I do like them now. I think I like that better style. than this comparable M5.
I feel like I like the M5.
You should look at them again.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've looked at one, I guess. But
yeah, I mean, that's a 200 mile an hour car.
I mean, it's interesting. I mean, it's great for what it's designed for.
I mean, also for like 24 grand.
That whole generation of BMW is too round for me.
Yeah, but compared to now, it looks good. It's starting to look better.
Yeah.
You know? All right, so anyone else off the top of your head?
I think those were my two answers from last time.
Mine was very general to start off with. And again, to go back to the archetypes and stuff, is there any R109, W26, W126, W124, W123 Mercedes? I think there was a whole period during the 90s and 2000s where the owners of the first owner of those cars were still driving them actively, maintaining them, servicing them. And then probably in the 2000s, late 2010s, started selling them off. And there were these cream puff, you know, I say California, but Florida, Miami, classic, you know, 560 SLs and 560 SECs. And and 420 SEL. Like that kind of one owner tank Mercedes body style type car, big body style Benz.
Big body Benz.
Where I think when you think of like a one owner type of car, those usually come up. Like some old lady with a W124 coupe convertible, the cab ones. Like that's an image that you can picture right now in your head that, you know, if you're an enthusiast, you'd look for that car. And I think people have been looking for those cars forever and they still pop up. But I think the crop of the people that own them are now, and that are, if they were the original owners in their 70s, 80s, and they've probably already moved them on. So there are probably not a lot of those left, but it's still an, it's kind of an attainable find. Yeah, I mean, the Mercedes one, that's...
I've got another one that's not an enthusiast car. And really, I'm clearly got a theme here, but any like mid-2000s Volvo SUV, the amount of those I feel like that just like some rich person just kept driving.
Yeah, but you know
way too long.
They're also, that I think that's a whole other topic, is the most hand-me-down cars, because like I think they still are one owner technically, but the parents just gave it, didn't even swap
the
title.
Go destroy this thing at college.
You're just talking about any XC90, you know what I mean? I bought an XC90 for my wife because I feel like between an old like 80 series Land Cruiser, an XC90, and some Range Rover Sport or something, that's like the modern old car thing that you'll see sitting in some, you know, high dollar house somewhere that's like the third car or whatever that still runs.
And yeah, it's not the it's daily fine, right? by any means.
And, you know, and I bought one thinking like, oh, they're reliable and blah, blah, blah. And they are, but it's usually if you're the first owner and maintained it for a while.
Oh, I forgot that. You had some ROs on that one, didn't you?
I did. I mean.
Oh, man, you were bad at buying wife cars.
I'm not good. Well, I buy them
that
cheap.
That and the BMW.
I like to buy them at auctions. And
I love when you buy cars to your wife.
Yeah, and then I buy them cheap and put what I should have spent on them.
It's the classic buy our D2 and our P38.
Yeah, I mean, but you know what? I asked Cindy if she loves the BMW.
Yeah.
Honestly, because it's really fast.
It's the turbo noise, you know.
Yeah, and I never have to put diesel in it. And the Volvo stuff, that reputation is not going to continue. I think that's kind of dead. They stopped making the V70. I don't think Volvos, I think they're obviously like all cars a bit more disposable.
Well, you know, all the twin charge, I mean, that's got to be a problem long term.
Yeah. And it's kind of a shame, you know, like that stuff's not going to last like it did. I mean, that's everything. That's a very general statement.
Hey, man, I used to.
Yeah. Other ones on that list. I had RX-7. I had original.
Oh, yeah. I think I disagreed with that one.
Yeah.
But I had no real doubt.
The 90s RX-7. I forget what the rotary. FD. Whatever. And actually, I just saw a YouTube video where they pulled an original 7,000-mile one out of someone's garage that they. Again, those cars either blew up or you still have it and doesn't have a lot of miles on it, because I don't think there was anything in between, because all the engines blow up. So that's a, you either have it or you don't. I don't know. But
it's good looking cars.
Really good looking car.
Not a huge, you know, road
I haven't really experienced one a lot. It's a niche car like an Elise that if you're really passionate about it, you like to tell people about. And you probably don't get invited to a lot of car things. I had written down casually diesel trucks, diesel 4x4, either it's an OBS Ford 7.3 or 6.0 or Chevy.
All my answers from last week are coming back to
me. Yeah, less Chevy 6.5s because those don't make any power. But, you know, still the amount of, like, one-owner 7.3s and stuff that are kicking around, there's a lot.
I think
still.
They're
still popping up. Actually,
I think last week I pivoted off of that with any boxy half ton, but not original owner, second owner, long second owner.
The gas ones don't stick around.
Everybody's
with an owner
girlfriend
long enough,
dad had one at some point.
I'll tell you what the big change is though in like country music videos and stuff, seeing like it go from the box Chevy as like the good old truck to like the rounded body, like late 90s Ford F-150s.
No way. That's what they're doing?
They're in it. I forget what it was, and I was like, oh,
I don't even know the last time I saw a running, like, 2001 F-150 that wasn't just dogged.
There is one guy on Instagram that, like,
I'm sure they're out there.
His character is, like, a guy from, like, 05, and he has, like, the nicest, like double cab. Man. He's got Krager wheels on it, and you look. It's like black. It's like an Eddie Bauer black on gold. And you're like, it looks okay.
That's
I get
a
it.
Hard sell.
It's a hard
for me.
Sell. It's not an
hard
easy
not
sell.
To just go OBS.
Yeah, I mean, again,
I mean that's the car I grew up. Like, you know, that was like the modern F-150.
I had a
model
single cab long bed red OBS like 94 F-150, and I still think that's one of the best trucks, best looking trucks too, ever made. Besides the square body Chevy stuff, but I think those are all, they're either like restored too much, or they're rusted out, or they're just like jacked up kids. Like the intermediary ones don't exist because they weren't used as much, I think, on farms and stuff. Like, that's why there's less of them, but those like 7.3 work trucks, like farm specs, they're just kicking around still. All right, what else did I have? Porsche's air-cooled 911s. I watched a video of a guy pulling out of a garage with 10,000 miles. Like they bought it in the late 80s. They drove it a little bit. The husband died. It sat.
I think that was another one I disagreed with. I mean, they're out there, but like...
You know, it's also one we didn't mention. We mentioned on the smell episode of like the most like the cars you can just get in with a blindfold on and you know what it smells like. An air cooled 911, you get in and it's like, yeah, it's got a pretty distinct smell. But I won't go too much.
It'd be a fun test to do at some point.
Yeah. But it also, like any Porsche, you bought it less casually. So I think it has a higher. That probably has a higher retention rate for first owners than other vehicles because even now, since the allocations, they're not easy just to just buy one. There's a lot of them, but it's sometimes harder
like
just to buy
one.
Them. Yeah.
This feels like we're just naming every car.
Yeah, but you know, statistically, so I think Alex looked this up and it's Mustang, Corvette, and Miata. I think Miata is the first one.
That's genuinely shocking to me.
Yeah, all
Mustang.
Boring.
Was on the list.
Well, I think about all the buy, they just buy Mustangs or Corvettes and just put them in a
I feel like
bubble.
If I think of a Mustang,
but
I just
think that
think
offsets
of the third
the numbers
owner.
From a statistical standpoint. You know what I mean? Like that's
well, now, are they doing it purely by volume or by percentage?
It's just a quick Google. I'm not doing producing on these.
So a lot more Mustangs floating out there than
a lot of Mustangs, but a lot of people just, you know, store them away. So I think it just adversely skews their numbers. All right. If you have any suggestions, let us know in the comments. What do you think people own the longest from an enthusiast car standpoint? All right, the next one. The dumbest improvements Land Rover has made to their existing trucks and vehicles in the modern past, I guess. Let's call it like 80s, 90s, 2000s.
Well, I'll just go ahead and steal the low-hanging fruit. The CDL delete for D2s because they had traction control and didn't need it anymore. Not that traction control is bad, but getting rid of CDL, that was rough.
But I feel like you could tell that was, and I'm sure there's an answer, there's a history here. I didn't look it up because I don't really care that much, but I feel like that came from the marketing department. They're like, hey,
I think
listen,
it came from the accounting department.
Came from the, no, but again, some of them had the ability to lock.
Well, it was a cheapness thing. You
they're
know.
Just eliminating the simple.
It's more expensive
mechanism.
To redesign it if you still have
right.
stock.
Right.
I bet that cost them more in the long run because then they had to bring it back.
And then they had to bring it
under
back.
A different design.
That would be a good one to talk about is manufacturer changes that were removed that had to be brought back due to customer complaints, like buttons on like
I'm
Volkswagens
so
and Mercedes
that.
And whatnot today.
I can't think of a great example, but I feel like 911s had like a whole thing. Well, you know, the headlights. Headlights. 996
yeah.
back to 997. That was a big one. Well, we're off topic.
I don't think I've ever done the research on why they did that.
Why they swapped to the runny eggs?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it was like some type of like integration with turn signals. Yeah. Man, that was a bit rough time of cars.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So no CDL for the D2s. That was a big one. I mean, again, they're obviously not thinking about the third and fourth owner like we are of these trucks, but buying a D2, if you're going to do off-road stuff and then having to install a locking LT230 in it is an expensive way to get back to par. Obviously, we've experienced the trash control in a very functional state. It does do a very good job of managing and getting up stuff. It is great, but
Both is better.
if you're going to go and do things where that could potentially fail or break, You would like...
Potentially.
Potentially, you would like the option
to lock
the
center disc. I don't think it ever really fit. Does traction control ever go out on E2s? Yeah. Has that ever happened?
No. Well, we just learned today that apparently if you lose a wheel speed sensor in a new Defender, you only have rear-wheel drive. Hmm. Were you in that conversation?
I haven't been paying attention to that.
Well, there's...
Honestly, that sounds like a great way to start doing...
I didn't believe it.
I just snip one?
No, they're doing the Rebel Rally, and they're complaining that they didn't have... They're like, the truck is stuck in rear-wheel drive.
That'd be fun.
It would be fun. And then,
fishtailing up a ski slope.
But the fact that a modern Land Rover defaults... It's possible to default only to rear-wheel drive is insane to me, especially because it has the drive shaft and thing. Like, but, you know, like an M5 competition, and BMWs can meter power via the center diff back to the rear wheels,
Subarus,
and throttle it. So it's possible. Common. It's just weird. All right, improvements as well. I put sunroofs because every sunroof that has ever been on a Land Rover has adversely affected it since the beginning. That's not even a high mileage complaint. I think when, you know, R3s were new and D2s and D1s were new, all the sunroofs suffered from very catastrophically leaking situations, which caused headache woes.
Which, that is not a Land Rover thing. That is a lot of car thing.
I think due to positioning of the electronics, like
I know Volkswagen's pano roofs was like a whole thing. Having never done one, because I'm not a Volkswagen guy, but Matt was telling me all about it the other day.
It is.
Because we were just going after
all roads and stuff like that.
We were just going after sunroof leaks on a Mercedes over there a day or two ago.
I think the Land Rover stuff's more susceptible to it, though, because I feel like what happens is, and this is all, you're right, it is most manufacturers, the carpeting that it flows into does not distinctly, you have rubber mats and stuff, so it's so thick that it contains the water very well, and until you start physically smelling the rot or the moisture, you know, it's, you can't, you know, you're not really going to notice unless things go south, but I think that the sunroofs, and they don't, boy, they slide back a little bit. Like, they provide a little bit of light, so you get sunburn. Like, they just don't.
Yeah, I'm not a sunroof guy by any means.
There's no, you can't even climb out of it. You can't even stand up in it.
I think I've opened one of my truck, like, twice.
Yeah, rommel around, you know. Lifetime trans fluid. I mean, obviously, you can replace the pan and stuff these days. We talked about removing the dipstick was removed, I think, after the D1 to the D2.
For the trans,
For the trans, you can obviously install a dipstick in a D2, but, I mean...
Which, again, not specifically Land Rover by any means.
By any means.
BMW was a huge...
But I think statistically speaking, D2s have a higher transmission failure rate probably because you can't check the fluid yourself and it's going to drip and leak and stuff. So it's a kind of a bummer. This one was good. Locking gas caps, whether it's the D1 or the D2.
I've been personally foiled by that one several times.
Yes.
Like you press the button, you can hear the plunger going, but it's not quite unlocking.
There's nothing you can do. Right.
You know, unless there's a second person, just help it open.
And that's screwed. And that's like for us when we buy these trucks that have sat, they all have dead batteries. You jump the battery to get it running. And of course, it doesn't have gas in it. So you drive to the gas station. And then you won't unlock unless you turn the truck off. So then you turn the truck off to open the gas cap, and you have no battery power because your alternator is probably bad also. So you can't unlock. So then you have to jump it to open the gas cap and the battery, and it's just the whole thing. And that's the problem with those.
Siphon my gas. I don't even care.
This isn't East Africa. We don't need it. I mean, same with the D1 with their locking panel. Is the keys are all crooked and bent. No one ever lubes the little actuator for the gas cap.
My Defender has a locking just spin on gas cap, and like it has failed
that's
on
fine.
Me before.
Right.
No, it failed on me. I spent like,
you can delete that.
Well,
easily.
Yeah, super easy. But I spent like 8 minutes in a fucking sheets just jimmying my key around.
Well, you're gonna have like you have a high potential of breaking the key off in the ignition, let alone going around and sticking it in the outside of the gas cap too. So that's a whole thing. Which is funny because they don't really have that. The R3, I don't think it locks at all. And the
I don't mind when they, you know,
leave
you
it
just,
open.
Like, click
yeah.
it in and
keep
it pops
your,
out.
Keep your gas tank slutty. Just keep it wide open. Another one, Super Lock. Super Lock on, I think it's really the P38 and the L322 and the D2. It's kind of a useless feature to me. They brick themselves out. You super lock it. The key gets reprogrammed. There's ECU issues and your truck is dead. Mike has very intimately discovered this with his... Well, no, that's a second issue. We'll get to that one.
I think that's too weird.
But any super lock feature, again, the trucks, I see no real reason for it. I think that was a gimmick. I think it affects us 10th owners of 200,000 miles, but I don't know why anyone would think that was a great idea. I think that's just a product of the 90s and Viper alarm systems and all that stuff they're putting in that adversely affects ownership. The P38. Just in general.
Oh.
Yeah. That wasn't an improvement. Next topic. No actual locking. Physical locking actuation of the door locks for L322s. I'll let you talk about that one.
So my wife washed my key, and so my key fob would no longer unlock the truck. I guess that was all that I had ever used to unlock the truck. And all right, well, I guess I'll have to get a new key, program it to the car, whatever. Go to unlock the car. And come to find out that my door actuator no longer functions, and so I could not unlock the car manually.
Like we could get key to the, we got power through the rear.
Yeah, I put power on the car.
Yeah, well, we can get 12 volts to potentially unlock it, but it
didn't matter because the key,
the door lock failed.
The door lock was failed, and there's only one on an
L322. Yep.
And so I was like, oh. Guess I'm done.
Yeah.
You can press any button inside the car with a Slim Jim. You can pull the handle twice, three times. Car didn't care. It's just locked.
I wonder if the door handle even moved from the inside. Yeah, I mean, basically to break a window at this point. Yeah. So the truck's been sitting for 3 years.
It's been sitting because I refuse to break a window.
You should just break the window. Just for the sake of those tires.
I should.
All right, so that was our last topic. Anything you want to add to that, please let us know in the comments. Let's jump to the auto auctions. I did bid on two cars this week, no dice. One was a 135,000-mile LR3 two-owner in Colorado, great condition. It went for like $6,000, which shipping and everything here would end up around like $75,000, $8,000+. So kind of out of the budget of the guy that was looking for that. Other than that, I don't have a whole lot of stuff saved. We got an 89 Oldsmobile Tornado Trofeo. In New York, pretty cool cars if you know what it is. Lots of weird tech, digital dash, great coloring there. But I mean, nothing that anyone listening to this podcast is interested in. We got some. Oh, it is sold. Manual 911. It's a 996. It sold for $13,800. So you're still getting manual cheap 911s.
Damn. If
you're interested. Yeah, no one was interested. I don't.
996s are back, dude, on the menu.
I know. Z3Ms. I'm seeing a lot of Z3Ms on Carvana. This one's down $8,000 for a Z3M, a 2000.
What year? Okay.
That's an S52.
S52.
That's fine. That's good. That's a good engine.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, that's a white.
Torquey.
Yeah. Oh, the transmission problem. And engine. Okay, this one's a little not as good.
You'll get bogged down in the detail.
There was four good ones for around $15,000. And I think for that type of BMW is a really great deal.
Oh, engine problem. Oh, transmission. Yeah.
There's also a one-owner 525 IE39 manual with 272,000 miles. Again, one-owner
270.
No, it's just a normal one. That's kind of cheap if you want something to break and fix. You got one owner XK8s, a lot of XKRs, XK8s, and they're 06s too. So you have the last model year, you've kind of got like a semi-updated drivetrain. That's probably the most desirable versions of those cars. One has a rusted floor, but the other ones look okay. And that's it. Nothing else L322-wise. You guys missed a few of them that I posted earlier. I mean, everyone wants an L322, but no one wants to pay a couple bucks for them. And they are enthusiast cars now. And you're not going to get them for super cheap. So I think that's it. Thank you for listening and watching. And we'll catch you on the next one. I love you. Goodbye.
Bye. I love you.